Welcome to our podcast series on African scientists at the University of Bern. I am Dr. Jokoro Jalo, Associate Researcher at the Center for the Study of Language and Society and Coordinator of Initiative Africa. Today we have with us Samuel. What is your name, Samuel?
My name is Samuel Ajekum, and I'm based at the Institute of Geography here in the University of Bern.
So, where are you from? Could you tell us something about yourself, about your origins, about your academic itinerary before coming to Bern?
Okay. So I'm Ghanaian. I was born in Kumasi, Ghana, the second largest city in Ghana. That's where I started my education, of course. And then I moved to different regions in Ghana. So I went to the central region where I did my Bachelor of Arts in Geography Education. I studied in the University of Education, Winneba. So it's one of the two universities based in the region. So I spent 3.5 years there studying geography. And then I climaxed my undergrad with an Erasmus Plus exchange at the University College Copenhagen. I think a few years ago. So that was the end of my bachelor. And then I went to the Netherlands, specifically in Wageningen University and Research, where I pursued a Master of Science, Urban Environmental Management, and I specialized in land use planning. I really like land use planning because my research interest revolves around abundant and equitable urban green space provision. And for me, I think it's an issue of land use planning, because to realize that as a spatial objective, you need land use planning that not only look at planning how a city should become, because that can be a dream. We can dream as much as we want or we like. But then the real question is, who are the landowners? And it's a land use plan that really touches the core, the elephant in the room, land ownership.
Since when are you here in Bern?
I've been in Bern since April 2023, so probably a year and a half, or almost a year and a half in Bern, yeah.
Okay, very nice. So you know something now about the country?
Yeah, quite a bit about Switzerland, yeah.
Okay, very nice. So what challenges or barriers have you found here at the University of Bern? So, and if, what would you change for the future?
Okay. I think I would start from my early days in Bern. As a researcher in the University of Bern, I started, of course, you know, for PhD, you don't really start, you can start any time, you know, of the year. And so I started in April, and I just went to my institute and stuff like that. And I was wondering, where can I get practical information about the university, you know, like what scientific communities are there here? Are there even international office, you know, that you can ask practical information about, you know, integration questions, you know, these transferable skills, stuff like that. So it took a while, you know, I had to, you know, ask people actively, you know, ask people, and then there's, oh, there is this, there is that. But I think, in this respect, it would have been very nice for new, you know, researchers or new PhD students to be introduced to this system early on. I know it is done normally in September, but if you look at when some of us start, it's really a long time before you are actually introduced into this formal event. So like it can also be just practical information, a booklet that you share early on to new employees.
So lack of information was for you a big challenge.
Absolutely.
So what else could you say? What was for you like a challenge?
I mean, broadening the issue, you know, it's a new country, new language, and I mean, you struggle to find your way around. If you haven't lived in Germany before or like any of these countries that have these Germanic languages, you can't even make sense of your whereabouts, you know, here in the city. And it's even complicated in Switzerland where like you speak Swiss German and stuff like that. And so that was also a challenge, but I guess it's something that is beyond the university, the point. But it's again tied to this practical information to just make you aware there is a shock. But sometimes awareness of the shock is already enough to, you know, help you. Because for me, sometimes came across as a shock, you know, because I wasn't told that this is going to be the case.
A shock culturally, linguistically, living in a new environment, not having the key information you need to find yourself in this new environment.
I would say that since I got to know of the important stuff, it really, really helped me. It helped me. It got me more relaxed and more settled here. For instance, when I found, there is a language course, you know, and I got to know only in the summer, like 2 or 3 months after I came to Bern. And I took the call. It was really helpful, you know. So those programs are really good, I should say. The transferable skills courses are also good. You know, it helps you to think beyond your disciplinary boundaries. What, you know, site of skills or broad skills can you have? Could be technical or social. And I think it has this important added value to the PhD or whatever research you're doing. It gives you leverage in many areas. Also helps you to be more imaginative. Sometimes you take a course on, you know, scientific writing. It's the time that you feel at peace to, you know, go again as a novice and learn the basics. So because if you are in the time pressure of doing your research in your office, sometimes you even imagine, spending time just reading about, you know, how to write this interesting paper that you want to do, is it really worth it stopping and going to read that? It's always like you have this guilt, maybe it's not the right time to do that, and then there is never the right time, but because there is this provision, you always feel, this is the right time, the right moment to step back and learn the principles of how to communicate your research in writing.
So in this context, you say you are from Ghana.
Yeah.
Where is Ghana exactly?
So Ghana is in the western part of Africa.
Yes.
And actually bordered in the south by the Gulf of Guinea or Atlantic Ocean, as many would know.
Yeah.
And we are surrounded by a lot of French-speaking countries like Ivory Coast, Burkina Faso, and Togo. So it's one of the few Anglophone countries in the region.
The region, exactly, exactly. So it means you are from Africa, and generally speaking, you are African.
Yeah.
So what do you think is your role here at the University of Bern as an African scientist?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I mean, I see myself as a scientist, a researcher, and the first responsibility I can think of is that I have an epistemic responsibility, right, to kind of make and justify and also transmit true claims about my domain of research. Not only so, but I also have a social responsibility. As you said, having lived in Africa, I have lived experiences of how things work beyond the science that I have. And so that also puts on me like the role to, you know, align my research towards socially desirable ends and democratically held values. And those are very important if you can make any meaningful research, you know, about Africa. And so as an African scientist in the University of Bern, this is really my role I see doing that. I mean, my role as a scientist here.
Responsibility between Switzerland and Ghana.
Yep.
So between Africa and Europe.
In Europe,
it
yeah.
means exchange between both parts.
Yes.
So how would you actively promote this exchange between, like, the University of Bern and African research institutions of higher education?
Yeah, so it's a very interesting question, and I will continue from this epistemic and social responsibilities I've outlined. It's also, these are responsibilities that can be in conflict, you know, because sometimes if you are so connected to your lived experiences and stuff like that, you may want to project, you know, that social desirable outcomes, like meaningful social outcomes over the rigorous science that you have to do. And that tells me that doing good science about Africa is not a lone responsibility of the individual researcher. So the scientist is not a lone agent. You need some form of collective to help you find harmony between these two different goals, right? And that's why it's also very important to have collaborations with other institutions. And this is how you start building collectives. So collective in a sense that would make you aware of what the impact of your research is. In Africa, at least in Ghana, there is a saying that the path paver is always not aware that his back is crooked.
Okay.
And so you need people by your side or behind you to always drive and steer these processes. And so this is more of like the abstract thinking, why we need collaboration. But in concrete terms, how to do that, I think we have started, I mean, I've joined this initiative of Freak and this presentation so far, and invited scholars from Africa to, you know, deliberate and also share knowledge about how things work there. It's one of the steps to achieving that, you know, having more research collaborations with African universities.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, systemically, they are disadvantaged in, you know, securing of funding.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe if you're based in Europe, you have more advantage of getting the funding.
Yeah.
And we have to actively think about how we can include people in Africa.
Yeah.
And from my experience, African scientists are, and some of my colleagues also share the same view, that African scientists are very, very versed in the empirics.
Yes.
But you also need theory to do that. But over the years, it has been more of, you know, having empirics and picking theory from West. But that is not really the case, you know. It doesn't work like that, because you may be disconnected from the social reality.
Yes.
And so these collaborations, I think, should also be forged along the lines of creating a lot of Southeastern theories. For instance, what would a Southeastern urban theory mean, you know, beyond what we've known already from the Western context? We can speak of informality in Africa, which is abundant. But however you see it, it has a role to play in sounding theory.
Yeah.
And so these are discussions that we have to, you know, be open and have.
Interesting, Samuel. Very interesting. So a lot of insight about ideas about the necessity of collaboration between both parts, between Africa and Switzerland and vice versa. So do you belong to a specific network of researchers in Africa or here in Switzerland?
In Africa, I mean in Ghana, when I was doing my bachelor, I and some of my few colleagues, we started like us building some NGO about sustainability. You know, that was a time we had, you know, discovered that, and we were trying to play around it, how to be a voice for that. But we have developed over time, you know, becoming more aware of these issues. This now the name of the association is called Green Innovation. So we try to mainly empower young people, you know, to actively think about sustainability, but also in a meaningful sense. What would that mean in the context of African society, where for me it's a construct of many different influences and identities? So it's not easy to, you know, forge a particular sustainable vision, you know. So it's the kind of thing that we're trying to do, challenge the youth to be creative and innovative about ways to do that, since they are more connected to the issues. I think 3 years ago, I joined the African Learning Institute, and that was very instrumental. I think it shaped my perspective a lot about science. That's where I started actively thinking about philosophy of science. What kind of science do we do? For instance, there is this debate on decolonizing knowledge, epistemic justice. And what African Learning Institute do as a transdisciplinary platform is to begin research issues with the community. So when I joined the activities, we went to some of the villages there, and then the idea was to understand them, learn from them, and see what kind of research questions, you know, they are interested in. So starting from that point was a good way to also say, although we have an agenda, research agenda, scientists, but I think it's always important that at the very beginning we foster this form of, you know, equal footing, or no, equal level playing field, where knowledge from the people that we claim to research in the world, you know.
Very nice. Thank you very much, Samuel. So, but you talked about integration. So what do you think? How could the University of Bern better integrate like people like you here at the university?
Yeah, it's an interesting but also a difficult question, because I think the question of integration for sure it's needed. But I guess the starting point should be having a platform where Africans, you know, would meet, you know, and talk about, you know, common issues. It's not only problems, when issues could also mean like interesting, you know, research agenda and stuff like that. And so that's why probably I like about the initiative of FREAK. It's a starting point of having a dialogue about Africa, about people's experiences. We all had different experiences, and maybe some of us are much better at addressing particular issue than others. So that space is already enough, you know, to help you share knowledge about how you can overcome some problems or challenges. And maybe you also feel more comfortable talking to, you know, some, I mean, at the very beginning of your study or you stay in Bern, you're probably more comfortable talking to an African or someone like that. But that shouldn't be the limit. I think we have to extend beyond that. The risk, having studied in the Netherlands and some other countries, is that the risk is that we tend to stay in a bubble, so it doesn't help. You know, you have an issue to discuss, you think you have a brilliant idea, but you always keep it in the bubble. So Initiative Afrique, what I think, it's not just about or for Africans, you know. We should also make effort to invite a lot of Europeans in there to also share knowledge. That is how we solve a problem, because we live in a global village, and whatever happens in Africa is connected to Europe and vice versa. So that the platform Initiative Afrique can be a very useful way of forging this kind of integration. Yeah.
Very, very, very well said. Initiative Afrique should not be a bubble.
Yep.
And I think it will not be any bubble. So my favorite question is now, before we close.
Okay.
So what do you miss the most from your country back home?
Yeah, it's a tough question. You know, it's usually about, you know, the first question, why do I do research, you know?
Yeah.
I want to do research to solve a problem, right? And the problem persists as you're here, and you don't know what to do. Sometimes it's just, what can I do? Is it because I'm here that problem persists? But for sure, that's not the reason. So sometimes I miss the fact that I'm not close to people who make policies, you know, that who could talk about these issues that we talk about every day, you know, here. But, I mean, of course, I miss, you know, some food. You miss certain food, stuff like that. It's also always the case.
What would be like your favorite food?
So there is this food called wache, and the ingredients are made from rice, black-eyed beans, and sorghum leaves. So we boil them together. I think it's quite popular in more of the Muslim, they call Zongo communities.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Samuel. These are very nice closing words.
Yeah.
So thank you for your time. Thank you for supporting us in Initiative Afrique. And I can give you the take-home message: Initiative Afrique is not going to be a bubble. Thank you, and
thank you.
We will hear from us very soon.